Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. I'm Maria. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Laura.
So excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I really got a very, 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 very late start on writing. I am almost 60. And so I always say that right up so that anybody out there who's like saying, oh my gosh, I'll never get around to writing if I haven't started by the time I'm 20, I'm here to tell you that is an absolute lie. I had things that happened. I was a medieval studies major and then went on and did, I worked for women's magazines. I worked for other magazines, had two kids, moved to Germany. So there was a lot going on before I started to think about writing.
So what inspired you to become a writer? Like how did this career came about?
I mean, honestly, I hear a lot of people say things like, I always wanted to be a writer when I was a little kid. I was always very happy being the audience. I loved reading. I didn't feel like I needed to write. And then finally, it wasn't so much about being a writer. It was being a writer for certain stories. It was that the story needed to come out. Not that I knew. And at some point, that's what happened.
So what was that journey to get the first book published? You know, how do you become a debut author?
I think like most people, I would love to hear the story of the person who wrote their first book, sent it to their first agent, got it published by their first choice publisher. I would love to hear that story because I would brand that a fairy tale the first time out. I actually had written two YA books in part of what I imagined to be a trilogy when we were in Germany. And I sent it because I was a sort of idiot baby writer. I sent it to the only agent I'd ever heard of, which was way too large for an idiot baby writer, but they took it anyway, and they tried to sort of send it around. It didn't go anywhere, which is fine. And then I started to write another book, and I got 3/4 of the way through that, and then this book came to me, and I said, wait, no, wrong story. I'm writing the wrong story. This is the story I should be writing. And I wrote it as a standalone because, again, like an idiot baby writer, I did not understand that there really weren't standalones, mm-hmm. in, especially in paranormal. Mm-hmm. And I sent it to an agent whose daughter went to high school with my son.
Oh, okay.
You never know where those networks are.
Yes, that's a really network.
Yeah, and she liked it, and she took it, and she, sent it around.
So let's talk about, paranormal romance, and, was your YA paranormal also, or was it just?
It was not, I call it pre-post-apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Because I always feel like there's this moment when the apocalypse is starting in slow motion. When I was in Germany, the era that really interested me was 32 through 38. And I wondered what it was, what were people thinking as this thing was moving forward? This absolutely awful thing was happening and they weren't quite understanding it. Quite understanding how terrible it would be. So that's the kind of thing that I was trying to do, was this kind of pre-post-apocalypse.
I love this. And I feel like that, there was a market once upon a time. There was a lot of dystopian, a lot of post-apocalyptic,
a lot of
YA.
Yes, exactly.
So there was a market for it. So
one of these days there may be a market for it again, and then I'll try that out.
So what made you decide to write an adult paranormal romance?
A number of things. One, I like paranormal because some people think of paranormal as anything that has magic in it. Mm-hmm. I think of it as paranormal in its most original and basic meaning, which is beside normal. Mm-hmm. So for me, paranormal means you're like normal's wingman. Mm-hmm. You're in the passenger seat watching what normal is doing. It's a way of looking at who we are and at our assumptions through this slightly magical lens. So I think that's why I really like paranormal. And in terms of romance, I realized that I was increasingly starting books and having this uneasy feeling that things were not going to end well. And I remember specifically a book that I really liked called Mrs. Caliban, and now I'm blanking out on the author, but it was really sort of the basis for The Shape of Water. Mm-hmm. She falls in love with this monster, and I think I was like 7/8 of the way through, and I knew it was going to go so horribly, and I just didn't want to read that part mm-hmm. anymore. I didn't want to see that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I want something that in the end is happy.
Yeah.
Or is redemptive or something.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wrote romance. And for adult, you know, I think the sex is fun. I'm an adult, I'm 60. I like the idea of having adults mm-hmm. figure things out, you know, not kids who are still sort of tormented by the guy who dropped them at the high school prom. Mm-hmm. That just does not resonate with me anymore.
Yeah, I think I have a hard time resonating with, like, even college students. Like, we're in a college. Like, it's hard to resonate. I'm like, just get it together. Like, in 20s, I'm like, you know, like your 30s, like you feel better, you feel like in a different space. Like, it's just a low maturity that you just look for. And so it makes sense to go for the door.
Right. Exactly.
There's different levels of angst. It's just like, you don't want to have like the same angst that you have when you're 15.
Exactly.
So. Exactly. All right. So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
Okay. Can I tell a story?
Yes, you can.
All right. My first two books, I've always been a pantser, and my first two books, I had sort of the first scene, the last scene, a couple of major scenes in between, and that was it. And I wrote the first two books in 6 months, which for me is pretty good. I'm not a fast writer. And then the third book was coming up, and because I was sort of doing promotion of the first two and various other things, I just gotten distracted. There's also something, just to backtrack, there's also something incredibly pure about writing something that you don't have a contract for. Mm-hmm. You know, you can sort of do it as you want. It's carefree, and the anxiety of a deadline is simply not there. And I think you can write faster, honestly. So then I get to my third book. I do have a deadline, and I'm having a lot of problems. It's just going slower than I would like. And I mentioned this on Twitter, which is the font of all good advice. Is the irony coming across here? I just don't know if the irony's coming. And so I mentioned it on Twitter, and somebody says, well, you don't outline, and that is your problem. And I said to myself, that makes sense. I don't outline. That's my problem. And I had remembered seeing something that J.K. Rowling did, which was, oh my God, it was magic. You want to talk about magic? This was a magical outline. It had main characters, secondary characters, time of day, props, weather conditions, lighting, you name it. It had like 20 different things. I did the same thing. I did exactly that. I thought this is so brilliant. I did the same thing. And I had spent a lot of time on it. And so then I started to write. And the problem is the characters started to gestate on their own and they suddenly didn't want to do what I was making them do. Mm-hmm. And I would sort of grab them by the scruff, shove them in the outline and say, this is what you are going to do. But the characters were not puppies and they refused to. And I spent so much time on that before I finally learned to throw out the outline. I think I kept exactly one thing from that outline, which was the water is damn cold. And that was it. That was it. I think I wrote 300,000 words to get an 85,000 word book.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's so sad. So no, I'm a pantser.
I love that. And I love the fact that you gave it a called try. It did not work.
It did not work.
So you're like, you know your style and not like that. And so, even if you just get to know the characters as they come to you, they tell you what's happening, they showcase different things. Do you find yourself, when you had to revisit, you had to revise a plot, do you find yourself cutting things or adding more things?
Okay. Have you ever seen somebody do like a clay bust?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, they have like a metal structure. Mm-hmm. So that's like my first draft. And then they cram a lot of clay on there.
Yeah.
Way more clay.
Yeah.
Than they actually need. And then they start digging away at it. And that's kind of when I visualize my process, that's kind of what it is. It's a lot of cutting away, smoothing out, adding more on to other places. It's not clean. I have such admiration for people who start out and really have it all the way through and then have to make tiny tweaks on their second go through. That is not me.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Everyone has their own process. Yeah. You just have to figure out what works for you. Were you originally contracted to do multiple books in a series or did you just thought it as a standalone and were like, oh, we need more books. You were one.
I was originally contracted. I did, again, I imagine this as a standalone.
Yeah.
Named rather unimaginatively Silver.
Oh, okay.
After the lead character.
Yeah.
And then I sold it as a 3-book contract and I suddenly had to come up with 2 other books. At first I offered them 2 different options. One was a trilogy that followed Silver and Tiberius through all 3 books.
Okay.
And the second was to do all 3 books, but each focusing on a separate character. Thankfully, the editor took the second option because I really realize how complicated it is to do a really good trilogy that follows all the way through. It follows like a set of characters all the way through. You know, you often have a bridge volume in volume 2 or, you know, all the excitement is saved up for volume 3. It's just much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when I was in the middle of doing the 3rd book, I got a contract for another 3. So suddenly I had to like, I'm like a puppy in the water desperately trying to figure out, okay, where am I going to insert characters in this volume? I can then use for the subsequent volumes.
So that's a good segue. How do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of your series, like the characters, the ideas?
I have, while an outline does not work for me going forward, it does work for me to have a spreadsheet as I put characters in. So I you know, we'll put in, especially since I have hierarchies, who is the beta of this echelon? So, and I have all that out. And then I often have like a tiny little thing that gives them some defining characteristic or something from volume one that needs to be remembered in subsequent volumes. I have, however, I don't know if anybody will ever notice this, but I have made a mistake and I knew I was making it. I changed somebody's eye color between volume one and volume three, and nobody's called me on it yet, but I'm just waiting for them to do that.
It's all good. You know, when you're writing a book, like, you don't think about it. I talk to authors, and a lot of times they don't envision the series to be 5, 6, 7 books long.
Right, right.
When you're writing book one, you're like, you know, unless you're like, you know, the ending of this epic.
Right, right.
Like, chances are you're not, and so you may not keep track of things, and you may have, like, I think I interviewed Sam McLean, and she said that she had, in one book, she named one character one way, and by book three, it was a different name of the character. Same character, very different name. Like, she's like, it happened, you know?
So, right. Like, but you're keeping 100. I made a mistake of making this pack with 400 wolves, which if I were to go back and slap myself silly back then, I would have said, let's keep it to a more manageable, like 200 or something. But so there are a lot, I don't have them all named, obviously, but there are a lot of sort of secondary, tertiary characters.
So how do you come up with the names, actually? So.
I actually spend way too much time on most of the names.
Okay.
So Silver was because she's a silver wolf, and because in the old tongue, they speak an old version of old English, she's Quicksilver, and Quicksilver means, quick means lively or alive, mm-hmm. like the quick and the dead, and Quicksilver just means live silver, and I just liked that as a name. Tiberius is a different kind of werewolf, and all of them have Latinate names. They all have Roman names. So his father is August, and since August's stepson was Tiberius, it made sense that August's son would be Tiberius. Elijah, it's like Elijah in the wilderness in the Bible. Except in this case, the wilderness is New York City, and he's suffering in that wilderness. They all have names. My favorite is Thea Villalobos, because Thea Villalobos means goddess of the city of wolves. And I just thought that was right.
Yeah. So. I love this. I'm always fascinated when, like, how do authors come up with a name? Like, did the name come to you? Like, do you research? Right. And your names are so, like, they're so complicated. Like,
well, and Evie, who is the alpha and is the heroine of this book, of book four, Season of the Wolf, I had not thought I was going to be writing her story. I thought I was ending at book three, and I had named her after somebody I had admired greatly as a teenager. So she's got the one name. She's like the main character, but the one name that comes really from just somebody I admired.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your writing. Like, what's your writing process looks like? Like, when are you writing now during the pandemic, now that people are at home, so you may not have, you know, hours on end of, like, silence.
It used to be that I would wake up first thing in the morning before the kids got up and do a little bit of writing. And then when I got them off to school, do a little bit more writing. Now, of course, there's no getting anybody off to school. So I really am finding myself trying to sneak in 5 minutes wherever I can. You know, I have to say that half the time when I say I'm going to use the bathroom, I do that because it's a moment of privacy when I can sit there and write for 5 minutes.
Oh
And I have in this fourth volume, the one of the things about the alpha is that she's always got calls on her attention. Yeah. So there's always somebody yelling, alpha, alpha. And for me, this was kind of a recurring theme in my own life. Mom, mom.
Oh my gosh, yes. All right, so let's talk about Legend of the Wolf series. What was your source of inspiration?
I had been reading, I just gotten something out of a library, had a great cover. Do I remember what it was? No. It was not one of my go-to writers. And it had a story, you know, it was all about how the wolves were sort of the evil side. Mm-hmm. It was more like the Mr. Hyde to the human Dr. Jekyll. And I thought, is that really fair to wolves? Is that really what they're like? Yes, we have competed with them for a long time for resources, but that does not make them evil. Mm-hmm. And I thought, supposing I wanted to do something that emphasized that they aren't evil. And so I thought, supposing I made them more, they made them wolves first and foremost, and their human side was only something that they brought out, that they used because they knew they had to survive in a world where the humans are the alpha predators. They had to be able to pass as alpha predators too. And then that led to everything else. That led to everything else.
Yeah, see, werewolves are unique. Like, it's like the whole take on werewolves. Like, it's not what we normally read in paranormal, where it's like, mm-hmm. werewolf that shifts, like, you know, a few days of the year. And it's,
right.
You know, like, no, like, these are, they have alpha pack, and you saw them in Canada?
The shifters start in Canada, yeah. But the main pack is based in the Adirondacks, in upstate New York. So that's where they are. I didn't want to do exactly what you're talking about, which is, you know, the werewolf who has 6 hours where he chains himself to the basement with a, you know, meat locker full of raw steak and sort of sits out his change, because that wasn't going to give me the sense of the wildness and sort of the glory of being wild. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make it slightly longer, like 3 days, and where the whole pack, you know, you can't be wild in Boston for 3 days. That's not going to work. So they all had to keep coming together every month. They had to be together, because I wanted to emphasize again the importance of pack. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they have a mating ceremony, it's called a braiding, mm-hmm. because they braid together the three strands of the land, the pack, and the mated wolves themselves. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that all three of those elements were sort of consistently there.
And so each of the books follow a couple, but they're also a pack, you know,
we want
to get the happily ever after of the pack,
exactly. Exactly.
You know, so how do you manage to balance both, like getting both stories to make sure that they make
it was easier when when you have a trilogy, then I had this idea of how that was going to work out. But then I get another three, and the ultimate villain of the first three is no spoilers really, but the ultimate villain of the first trilogy is no longer available to be a villain. So I had to sort of start over. And part of the thing that, while I was looking at that arc, I was also looking at the arc of the characters within it, because I don't want to go through the same struggle. I don't want every pair of characters to have the same struggle. Mm-hmm. I want them each to have some new thing that they have to work on. In this fifth one that I'm writing right now, The heroine had always been sort of a shifter princess. She had been taken care of by the men in her life. But she had also always been discounted by the men in her life. She had been an adjunct. Nobody had paid really attention to her. They treated her as, you know, pretty arm candy type thing. And so I needed her to, this is her own particular struggle where she starts to feel, I can be dangerous. I am allowed to be dangerous. And that's her path. So that's a very important for me to have these different paths for each set of characters.
I'm excited for book five. I'm like, book five is really good. I know you're writing right now, but I'm like, just have it now.
Thank you.
So let's talk about A Seasons of Love. It follows a few days. So Seasons of Love is book four in the series, and it follows a few days after Dudley attacked the pack, where we have shifter prisoners. That's where the story set up. Tell us, what can we expect from the story? Now that we have you completed one arc and you're like, I gotta write through more books.
Right. Well, this is slightly a reset because you can't just, I kind of feel like you can't just go from one anxiety producing explosion to another anxiety producing explosion. Also because it follows the alpha, could, if they were in the middle of some horrible crisis, she would not have been able to allow herself to let go enough to fall in love. I honestly just don't think she could have done it. That would not have made sense for who she was. And then the hero, it was mostly about, for the hero, he had sort of conflicting problems. One, he was afraid of women who had been made small, mm-hmm. because his mother had been made very small. She had become a very small woman and then exploded. Mm. And August's wife, who is the new villain, had also been made very small. As one character says, there's only so small you can make a strong woman before she explodes. They're like stars that way. And so he's very both afraid of small women, which is why he's attracted, part of why he's attracted to the pack. But he also doesn't quite understand that being in love with someone as grand as Evie requires a larger love. You cannot just have her be in your orbit. That doesn't work. You have to have a larger love, one that is big enough for the entire pack and the land. So he has to learn that, which is a painful process.
I'm excited for book five. Because book four sets up the story that he's like, it sets up these arcs that's happening. You're like, right. You know, what comes next? What comes next? Do you see yourself, if the publisher comes back and says, three more books, do you see yourself, keep writing in this world? Or do you have ideas for other stories?
I think, you know, often when you have somebody who writes paranormal, they have so many varieties of magic and that you can keep going forever.
Yeah.
I don't. And I didn't want to bring in this turns out to be a fairy and this turns out, you know, I didn't want to do that because I wanted to make it seem almost realistic, mm-hmm. almost like, yes, there could be people like this living in our world. So that's what I really wanted. And so I think if I were to do 9 books, I'm not sure that would be possible to keep spinning out that. Besides, I have ideas for something, for a couple of other things. And so we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. I think it's tough because paranormal is one of those genres. There's series are really long, and those spinoff from those series are so they're 10, 15, 30, 50 bucks. I don't know how you do it. And we buy the world. So
right. Yeah, and also for me, the funnest part is thinking of the world, is trying to figure out the if this is true, then this must happen as well. Mm-hmm. Like if wolves are hated, and this is a hated pack, what does that mean for them? Well, I think they're very conservative. I think they're very suspicious. I think they hold on to their old ways, their old laws, their old languages, their old stories. So that helps me build this world. That's what I really, you know, I like building the world and building the relationship at the same time. And once the world is built, it does two things. One, there's no more to really build. And second is you've painted yourself into a corner. You know, you have now have so many restrictions on what will and will not happen that, you know, it just becomes much harder to move.
Yeah. God, thank you for sharing this. Like, I think I'm always fascinated when authors create these like magical worlds or like different worlds that are different from other. And then the whole process that comes about and, you know, the restraints that happen, you know, as you create the world.
Right.
You create different things. But, like, okay, it's not hard, you know. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. It's an opportunity for sharing with our audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
I really love paranormal, but I also am very big on fantasy romance. So fantasy romance isn't as big a genre as paranormal, but I think it has some really great writers in it. And I'm just going to talk about what I have been reading during the pandemic that has really helped me. And this is the other thing about fantasy romance is that it is really transporting. It really takes you away from whatever is normal. You're not going to find it there. So, I read the Grace Draven's books, The Wraith Kings, which started with Radiance and Eidolon. And I know that she is writing another book, which I think is called The Epos King. And that will be coming out whenever she's ready for it. So that was fantastic. I also reread the Dragonkin series by G.A. Akin, you know, who is Shelley Laurenson. But it's all dragon shifters. And one of my absolute all-time favorite books, period, is Dragon Actually. I reread that at least once a year. And I had read The Blacksmith Queen recently. And in The Blacksmith Queen, there is a tiny throwaway line which says, "Don't they have that human queen, the crazy one?" And I know when they say that they're referring to the heroine of Dragon Actually, which is Anwyl the Bloody. I mean, it has to be. It just has to be. So I went back and reread those. I have also been reading Jeffy Kennedy's. She had The Orchid Throne and Fiery Crown, which I loved. Those were so fantastic. And The Promised Queen is coming sometime shortly, so I can't wait to read that. I also reread Amanda Boucher's Kingmaker Chronicles because I know she is coming up with a spin-off tale of Cato, who's a great character in the Beta Team. I mean, it's not really about the main characters. It's not Cat and Griffin in the first three, but it's a spin-off character. And then I also started reading something I know is Western. I don't think I've ever read a Western in my life except for Lonesome Dove. And Carrie Lindell, who is also a source books writer, died recently after like a 6-year battle with cancer. And I had never known that. She was just such a wonderful, generous colleague. But she was actually also a rodeo competitor. And she knows this world else. So when I dive into this world, it's Texas Rodeo is the name of the series. And the book I started with was Reckless in Texas, the first one. And I have to say, again, like fantasy romance, it takes me to a place that is so divorced quality that it might as well be fantasy romance. But it's wonderful. It's wonderful. She's got a great writing style.
I love all these recommendations. And I even know Jeffy Kennedy, I interviewed her last year, and she's a painter. Because I was like, mm-hmm. It makes sense. Like when she was like, I was like, oh, it makes so much sense. I was like, how did you come on?
That's right.
The story came to me. And I'm like,
right. Exactly.
Like intricate world. And
yeah. I love that. I love seeing a world being built like that. It is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was shocked when I first heard she was a pantser, because the plots, in fact, for this series, you feel like the plots have this real arc. Like it's been carefully planned out, and there's a keystone, and there's this, apparently not.
I was so surprised. I was like, but it just, I thought you knew what was going to happen.
Right, exactly.
Like, it makes so much sense, but. Right. So.
Oh, wait, can I add one more that I suddenly forgot? Because this was actually crucially important. This was especially important to me during the pandemic, which was Ilona Andrews' Innkeeper Chronicles. Which is not, yeah, I know, I love Ilona Andrews, but this is one that nobody or fewer people know about.
Yeah.
And it is about a witch. I mean, I'm using air quotes for those who can't see, because she is really, they're really aliens is the truth, but she's a witch and there's a guy who's a werewolf, etc. But the main part of it is that she runs she has a house, and her power stems from that house, and she will do anything that she has to protect anyone who's inside her house. And during the pandemic, this has really spoken to me as a thing. You know, you're stuck in your house, your power is only in your house, and you have got to protect those inside. And she even has these characters, the Hiru, which are, you know, a sort of awkward creature that smells bad and has bad language skills, and they have these little secret sadnesses, and anybody who's been living with teenagers mm-hmm. will feel the Hiru and really empathize with that. So that is my sort of pandemic specific recommendation.
You need to pick that one up. I've been watching their Hidden Legacy series.
Right, which is wonderful. Which is
wonderful. Yeah. But I'm like, I want to go back to the backlist. Like, it's so good. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I need to try the pandemic book.
Exactly.
So tell us where you can find you online.
Okay, I have a very poor Facebook presence, but it's there, and it's just Maria Vale, I think. And then I'm at Maria Vale Author on Twitter and also on Instagram. And I'm mariavale.com is my website. And I do a once a month newsletter which says stuff about mythology and wolves and just what, and recommendations, stuff like that. So relatively painless.
Awesome. Thank you, Maria, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Laura. This was wonderful.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadingblog.com/sponsorships To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great greeter is waiting for you.